What is going on, sports fans? Welcome back in to the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Thanks so much for tuning in. Diving right into it. Obviously, the big thing from last night, the Boston Celtics dominant in their 106-88 win over the Dallas Mavericks, taking home their 18th NBA championship. They're going to have 18 banners hanging there in the rafters at TD Garden. And, I mean, this team was kind of destined to win the NBA title this year. And you hear a lot of the players talk about it. And going back to the 2022 season when they lost to Golden State in the NBA Finals, that was kind of that point for them that they started building the team up. They started building everything to get to this point. They had a plan. They knew it would take them a couple of seasons to get to that point, but they knew what they needed to do, and they went out and they did it, and now they're sitting here calling themselves NBA champions because of it. So congratulations to the Boston Celtics. Big game for Jason Tatum. Yesterday on the show, we talked about Jason Tatum and how his mentality has been so far through the series of, I may not need to go score a lot of points as long as I'm facilitating and getting the ball around to other guys who are finding the net. You know, that's fine. Whatever it takes to help us win. Well, he had a big game last night, a double-double for him. Did get his 31 points, but again, just being the facilitator that he's been all throughout the NBA Finals, 11 assists for him last night as well. Jaylen Brown gets 21 points. A little bit of a surprise for me, Kristaps Porzingis. KP decided he was going to get in the game and play. And I mean, you got an NBA championship on the line. You've got an opportunity to seal that championship. And he's not gonna back away from that. Went out there, played 16 minutes despite that tendon injury he has. And that is an injury that honestly and truthfully should have knocked him out of the rest of the postseason. But whatever they did for him as far as rehab there in Boston got him out on the floor for 16 minutes. He might have been in some pain playing, but he knew what was on the line, so he was definitely going to put it all out there and leave it there. I mean, again, I talked about the Celtics just kind of being destined to get to this point. They were the best team in the regular season throughout the NBA. They get into the postseason seemingly no matter what they kind of come up against, whether it's an injury to Porzingis or somebody else, they continue to just kind of roll through, right? So no surprise here that we're talking about the Boston Celtics being your NBA champion. As far as Dallas, Dallas is a good team. And I think kind of like what we talked about with Boston and how Boston kind of looked at the landscape of things and how their organization and how the team was after falling to Golden State in 2022 and said, you know what, here's the pieces we need to put together. Here's the plan for us to get back to the NBA Finals and win it. I think Dallas is in a position where they can do the similar thing. They can use this as a springboard to help make them a better team, a better organization, and a team that can actually get back to this spot and win it. Whether that's next season or a season or two down the road, I think that Dallas really can kind of use that same blueprint and that same model that the Celtics used to get them back into this position, and not only get them back into this position, but win once they get back to it. So I think for Dallas, you got to take a long, hard look in the mirror and say, okay, what did we have that was an issue for us? And I think a big thing here is defense, right? You come up against a team like the Boston Celtics, you're going to have a strong, solid defense to shut them down. And at times, they just didn't have that. I mean, even going back to the regular season matchup between these two teams, the final score of that was like 130 to like 90-something, I believe. It was not a close game at all. And the Mavericks even came away from that, and Jason Kidd as the head coach kind of changed some things up defensively, and it really seemed to work for the Mavericks because they started playing really well defensively throughout the rest of the season and throughout the part of the postseason where they were playing Western Conference teams. However, once they hit the NBA Finals and they were playing Boston, it really was kind of clear that even though they did make those adjustments, that they still had some work to do to be able to defend against a team like Boston. So you got to go out and you've got to look for some defensive help if you're the Mavericks. And I think you can honestly continue to just build this team, continue to grow around what you already have there now, because it's not a bad nucleus you have there now. Continue to grow around it, continue to build around it. And like I said, use the model that Boston put forth in front of you as an opportunity to kind of change the face of this organization and put them in a position to where they can be hoisting the trophy in a season or two. So I think Dallas is not far away from being an NBA championship team. You get to the finals, you're a good team, right? Nobody just walks into the NBA finals. You've got to earn your spot there. And they definitely did that, whether that was playing OKC or any of the other teams that they played. They had a tough battle throughout the Western Conference playoffs. They get to the NBA finals. They deserve to be there. They're a good basketball team. They just need to get a couple of few extra pieces, kind of do, again, a lot like what Boston did after they lost to Golden State in 2022. Go out and get the guys that you need to rebuild and kind of revamp things for you there in Dallas. Jaylen Brown, the MVP, I don't think there's any surprise there, was named the MVP. So he's taking home the MVP for the Eastern Conference Finals and the NBA Finals. And yeah, I think as much as we talk about the injury to Porzingis and how that could have affected the Celtics, they were able to overcome that. An injury I don't think they could have overcome would have been if Jaylen Brown would have went down. If Jaylen Brown would have gone down, it would have been very tough for the Boston Celtics to get to this point at where they're at. Jaylen Brown was the catalyst for this team, not only through the regular season, but definitely in the postseason as well. You know, you talk about Jason Tatum. You didn't even talk about Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday was fantastic for the Celtics in the NBA Finals, right? I mean, he led the team in rebounds again last night. So I think when you look at it in the landscape of the NBA Finals, Drew Holiday was a guy that easily could have challenged Jaylen Brown for the NBA Final MVP. But Jaylen Brown means a little bit more to that team than Drew Holiday does. And that's not a knock to Drew Holiday. That's just how it is. So I think if you're, you know, the Celtics, you got to be happy that Jaylen Brown was able to stay healthy. And I think you're going to do anything and everything in your power to make sure he stays happy there in that Boston Kelly Green, right? You want to keep him in Boston as long as you can. That's that organization changing player in Jaylen Brown. So I'm very, very, very curious to see moving forward just how well this team plays in the upcoming next couple of seasons. They're going to be good. Lots of people already talking about this could be the start of a dynasty, you know. This could be the new, Boston could be the new Golden State, you know, a team that's pretty much playing in the NBA Finals every single year. And you know what? If they keep Jason Tatum, if they keep Jaylen Brown, if they keep Drew Holiday, if they keep those guys together and healthy, I believe it. I believe it 110%. This is a very good team. They just blew through everybody in the postseason and took five games to close it out in the NBA Finals, but honestly, they had a great opportunity to sweep and just embarrass Dallas. But we're now, with this series being over, it's now 157-0 as far as in the NBA Finals, teams that take a 3-0 lead and go on to win the series. So that is still intact for the NBA. And one thing that I've noticed this morning, kind of waking up and just reading a couple of articles and seeing some social media posts, a lot of people are saying that this was a boring NBA Finals just because of, and I get it. You're looking at the NBA Finals. You want it to be exciting. You want it to be back and forth. You want it to be close games. And there just really weren't any close games, right? I think once the Celtics took a 2-0 series lead, I think a lot of people kind of looked at this as a done series, right? Because coming into this series, the Celtics were all about, we're here for business. We wanted to get back to this point to win the NBA championship. We lost it in 2022. We had to watch another team celebrate in the confetti on the court, and now we want that to be us. They had a goal. They had a mission, and it seemed like when they got up 2-0, even though there was still an opportunity for Dallas to climb back into that series with a win in Game 3, the way Boston came out and won Game 3 and just kind of put their foot on the throat even more of the Mavericks, it made it very difficult for them. And I think a lot of people just kind of looked at that series as, oh, it's done. I mean, I remember having a conversation over the weekend with somebody about how the Mavericks played on Friday night. That they played well, that they played like a team with their back against the wall with nothing to lose, and it was great that they were able to win. But the series was still over. There was no way they were coming back and even forcing a game seven. There was no way they were going to be able to fight back in this series. Because exactly what we saw last night is what happened. The minute you got Boston back in TD Garden, it was over. It was over. So I get the complaints from people that this was kind of a boring NBA Finals. But at the same time, I think the playoff system that the NBA has is it's one of the better ones in all of sports, honestly. Because the result you got on the court was exactly the result you should get on the court. The best team in the entire league won the championship. You didn't have some Cinderella story who just happened to be getting hot at the right time win the championship. You had the team that was significantly the better team throughout the entire regular season ultimately go on and just dominate the postseason and win the NBA Finals. So congratulations again to Boston on their championship. You know that parade is going to be a lot of fun. The Samuel Adams is going to be flowing. The Dunkin' Donuts is going to be flowing. And it's going to be a good party there in Boston for that celebration. Game five in the Stanley Cup Finals, that's going to be happening tonight between Edmonton and Florida. Puck's going to drop on ABC tonight at 7 o'clock in Sunshine. So they are back in South Florida for this matchup. And, Panthers, they're just so tough to beat at home. It is virtually impossible to beat the Panthers at home. Am I saying it can't be done? No, it can be done. It can be done. But when you've got a guy like Bobrovsky in the net, especially in a game after he gave up as many goals as he did in game four, 8-1, the final score of that game. When he gives up as many goals as he did, you got to think he's going to have it on his mind to shut them down and shut them out tonight in game five. Not just because of an ego or a pride thing, but because there's a championship on the line. If the Panthers win tonight, the series is over. They get Lord Stanley Cup for the first time in organization's history. What, 30 plus years? It's the first time ever they'll get to hoist that trophy. That team deserves it. That fan base deserves it. They've been waiting a long time. And it's definitely going to be interesting to see how it plays out tonight. Can Edmonton win it and make it a little bit more interesting? Oh, absolutely. They can. They've got the best player in the NHL right now on their roster. So, yes, absolutely, they can have a shot at winning it. But, again, I will say it is virtually impossible to beat the Florida Panthers at home. The Oilers will have to play perfect hockey if they want an opportunity at winning this game tonight and forcing a game six, which they will desperately need. Because right now, they can't afford to lose the game. Because if they lose the game, the series is over. But the interesting thing about this is there's actually pressure on both teams, which I think is going to make it very interesting moving forward with the pressure that is going to be on these teams. Because you look at the pressure for Florida is, like I mentioned a moment ago, they have not won a Stanley Cup ever. Their name is not on that cup. When you get this close to actually winning a series, when you've never won it before, there's a lot of pressure there on the team, on the coaches, on the medical staff, on everybody in the organization to finish the job. Because the last thing you want to do is get this close to winning the cup and choke it away. That is the last thing you want to do. So there's a lot of pressure on the Panthers right now to finish the job. You are this close. You are so close. You are 3 20-minute periods away from winning your very first ever Stanley Cup. Can they get the job done? That's the question they've got to answer, and there's only one way to answer it. Win. Go out and win. If they lose tonight, people are going to start doubting. If they lose a game six and we have to have a game seven, people are going to really start doubting. So you want to shut that down? You don't want there to be any more pressure on your back? Well, for the Panthers, it's easy. Just go out there and win. On the other hand, for Edmonton, we talked about a little bit. You can't have a loss in this game. The pressure is on them because they cannot lose. They have to win out the rest of the way. If they want to win the Stanley Cup, they have to win Game 5, Game 6, and Game 7. And anybody who is a casual sports fan knows winning three games in a row in a postseason best-of series when you are the down team in the series, that is hard to do. Is it impossible to do? No, we've definitely seen it before. But it is very, very hard to do. So the pressure is on both teams, and it's going to be who responds. And that's actually something that that some of the Florida Panther players were talking about when they met with the media over the last couple of days. It's going to be in this game. It's going to be who wants it more. Does Florida want to close it out more? Or does Edmonton want to force that game six more? Whichever team wants it more is going to win. And we're either going to be having a Stanley Cup trophy celebration in South Florida, or we're going to be getting ready for a Game 6 coming up in a couple of days. Either way, I think we're set up and we're poised for a great, great series. Definitely going to be lots of fun. I'm looking forward to Game 5 tonight. Again, you can catch that puck dropping 7 o'clock local time on ABC. And it's definitely going to be interesting to see how that game plays out. Really, lots of different storylines you could sit here and talk about. But I think the biggest ones is how these teams are going to deal with the pressure heading into Game 5. Whoever collapses, well, we're either going to see a Game 6 or we're going to see a parade. Either one. The College World Series, Florida yesterday, they knocked out NC State. So they advance on to the next round of the College World Series. They will actually be playing Kentucky in another elimination game coming up later on tonight at 6 o'clock. Winner of that game will advance on to take on Texas A&M in the semifinals of the College World Series. Same's the case for Florida State. They had that tough loss in the opening round. Both teams, both Florida and Florida State, both teams here from the state of Florida had tough opening round games. Florida State had that looked like he went past the strike. Looks like he went past home plate, and it was a strike. But they said it wasn't a check swing. They said it wasn't a full swing. Got to continue the at-bat. Florida State ends up falling. And then with Florida, Florida had a tough one against A&M. You know, they were battling in there against A&M. Guy just absolutely crushes a ball in the ninth inning with a guy on. Would have given Florida, would have tied the game for Florida instead of giving them the lead. But just unfortunately didn't have enough on it. Heck of a catch there by the right fielder up against the wall as he was leaping to rob that home run away from the guy. Although when you go back and look at it, I think that if he wasn't able to get it, it probably hits the wall and it's a double. I don't necessarily think it had the juice because it was dying pretty quickly. So I don't know if it had the juice to cross over the wall and be a full-on home run. I think it probably would have hit the top of the wall, bounced off, and been a home run or been a double. But either way, still just a tough play there for Florida in that game. Tough call for Florida State in their game in the opening rounds. But they showed up in the elimination games. Florida State taking care of business. Florida taking care of business. So now, like I said, Florida will take on Kentucky later on tonight. And then coming up this afternoon at 1 o'clock, Florida State will play UNC for spots in those next rounds. The winner of UNC and Florida State will play Tennessee. So it looks like the Seminoles may get another crack at the Vols there and repeat that first round opening round game. So we'll see what happens there. Some interesting news. I thought this was pretty cool. So we have the Hard Knocks that is off-season Hard Knocks, right? And we all know that that's going to be following the New York Giants. But we also have the in-season Hard Knocks, which is a live week-to-week. Well, not live, but it is a week-to-week look during the season of usually a team as they prepare for games and go on the road for away games. And, you know, just kind of gives you that inside look into what happens throughout the regular season for them. Well, Hard Knocks has announced yesterday that on HBO Max or Max, whatever you call it, that they are actually going to not do a team this year for in-season Hard Knocks. Instead, they're going to do an entire division, and they're going to look at the AFC North. I think honestly, it's a great idea. It's going to give you that inside look at the Bengals, the Steelers, the Browns, and the Ravens as they move through the 2024 season. Lots of great things that you're going to kind of get to see through this. A couple of the things I'm really kind of looking forward to: the quarterback room in Pittsburgh. How did the Steelers handle that, especially if Russell Wilson kind of starts off slow and is struggling early on? Do they kind of start thinking about Justin Fields a little bit there as far as taking over at the quarterback position? So I'm very curious to see how the Steelers quarterback room is handled through Hard Knocks. Also with the Bengals, the wide receiver room. You know, this is a team that's they've got talent, right? They've got talent. They've got Joe Burrow at quarterback. But they're having contract issues with T. Higgins. Lots of people, myself including, expect T. Higgins to become a free agent at the end of this season in the 2025 free agency market. So I'm very curious to see how they work through T. Higgins on this show. Is there any kind of behind-the-scenes drama? How do things play out with Ja'Marr Chase behind the scenes? Ja'Marr is another guy. Lots of people kind of expect him to maybe kind of look into free agency a little bit. I don't think he will. I think he and Joe Burrow have too good a chemistry. They played together at LSU. Now they're with each other in Cincinnati. I think they have too much chemistry for him to just kind of, you know, pack it up and go as soon as he's able to be a free agent. But, I mean, still, he's still got 2 years left on his contract. So how does that wide receiver room play out there for the Cincinnati Bengals? We'll get to see it all happen on Hard Knocks during this upcoming season, and I think it is definitely going to be interesting to see. Also, you just kind of get an inside look at the Cleveland Browns to see whether they're going to be a decent team or a dumpster fire. Honestly and truthfully, with the Cleveland Browns this year, it could really go either way. They've got talent on their team to where they could actually surprise a lot of people and win games that people didn't expect them to win. But, I mean, it is also, at the same time, it's the Cleveland Browns, and that is one of those teams in sports that everybody just seems to think is cursed for whatever reason or another. So we'll see how that plays out for them. We'll get to watch it all on Hard Knocks. And then, of course, with the Baltimore Ravens, I think they are the right there. I wouldn't even say they're the second best team. I would say they're 1B. If the Kansas City Chiefs are 1A, then Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens are 1B. It's going to be interesting to watch them. Obviously, the addition of Derrick Henry to their running back room and just kind of really moving through the season and being one of those favorite teams throughout the NFL and a team that I don't really expect to lose a lot of games this year. So we'll see how that plays once that gets kicked off coming up during the season. Definitely looking forward to that. Hard Knocks, again, covering the entire AFC North, not just one team, but they're covering a whole division. Maybe that's something they'll start doing. And they'll start covering divisions, and it really opens the door because there's a lot of great rivalries, especially in the AFC North. I mean, you're talking about Pittsburgh and Cincinnati hate each other. Pittsburgh and Baltimore really hate each other. Cincinnati and Cleveland don't like each other. They're, you know, battling it out there in those games. So I think it's definitely going to be a lot of fun to watch when this gets kicked off. Coming up later on during the regular season for the NFL. Finally, before we go here, Les Miles is in the news. He is suing LSU. Why? Well, because in 2012 and to 2015, LSU actually had to vacate wins during that time period. The total number of wins that they had to vacate for their football program was 37. Because Les Miles had to remove those 37 wins off of his record, he is actually no longer eligible to be a part of the College Football Hall of Fame. He doesn't have enough wins as a head coach. As a head coach, you got to have certain criteria of things, just like you have to have a criteria of things as a player to get into the Hall of Fame. Because, you know, not just everybody gets into the Hall of Fame. Les Miles is short a few games because of those 37 wins that he had vacated. So he's a little upset by that, and he is suing LSU, saying that he didn't get a proper opportunity to defend himself with everything that went down with the NCAA investigation, which, by the way, the reason they had to vacate these wins was because the NCAA did an investigation into them and found that there was a little bit of of some recruiting violations happening there at LSU. So they decided to say, you know what? We think that we are going to make you vacate some wins. We're going to give you some other penalties and levies against you. And Les Miles is like, well, hang on now. Don't I get a chance to defend myself? And they're like, nah, not really. We did the investigation. We found evidence. We found proof. We're not interested in what you have to say. So they go on. They levy the penalties. They have to follow it. They do. They vacate the wins. Les Miles loses the wins, just like LSU loses the wins. And now Les is like, well, hold on now, because I see Nick Saban, I see Urban Meyer getting ready to go into the College Football Hall of Fame. Why aren't I in? Oh, because I'm short on wins because we had to vacate wins. So let me sue LSU because it's their fault. Nah, homie, it ain't their fault. It's your fault. You were the head football coach at LSU when they had recruiting violations. I am sorry if you are somebody who is going to sit there and tell me, oh, well, the head coach doesn't always know what's happening with recruiting. There could have been violations and he didn't know about it. Bull, you know what? The head coach knows about everything happening in his program. He is the CEO of his program. He knows. So if you are the head coach of a program and there is a recruiting violation, 110%, it is your fault. So for Les Miles to be suing LSU because of the vacated wins, how about don't have recruiting violations? Because, yes, there are some ridiculous recruiting bylaws in the NCAA, but it's also not hard to recruit well without violations. Lots of coaches around the country are doing it. Or at least they're not getting caught. They're good enough to not do something that's going to get them caught. So just because either A, you committed the recruiting violation, or B, you got caught for committing the recruiting violation, you can't be mad and hold LSU responsible for this because you didn't get a chance to speak your piece. The evidence was there. The NCAA did a thorough investigation. They found the evidence. They didn't need you to speak your piece because they had what they needed. LSU committed recruiting violations in football. So therefore, they are going to be punished by vacating 37 wins from the course of 2012 to 2015. That's it. End of story. You don't need to speak your case. So Les Miles, it's not LSU's fault. It's your fault. Accept responsibility. And I don't know, maybe petition the NCAA to kind of waive, because of this particular situation, maybe waive that total of wins you've got to get into the College Football Hall of Fame as a head coach. I highly doubt the NCAA will go with that. Because, again, you had a recruiting violation, which is a fancy way of saying you cheated. So because of all of that, I really find it very hard to believe that the NCAA will go, we'll let you in even though you're short on wins. I mean, if you would have had a situation where medically you had to walk away from the game for a couple of seasons, then, yeah, sure, I bet the NCAA would probably give you a little bit of a grace clause there and still allow you to potentially get elected into the College Football Hall of Fame. But if you're Les Miles and you had a recruiting violation, when you were the head coach, you were the guy in charge, the NCAA is just going to look at that and they're going to laugh. Les Miles is not getting into the College Football Hall of Fame. And honestly and truthfully, I'm not even entirely sure he deserves to get into the College Football Hall of Fame. I mean, especially after what he did in Kansas, 3-18 overall as a coach in Kansas. My guy was there, what, two full seasons, if even that? And then he's out the door, done, gets fired. Yeah, he's got championships at LSU. Yeah, he's got good teams that he coached at LSU. But there's lots of coaches across the country that have a national championship ring on their hand. Does that mean that they should get into the Hall of Fame just because? That's like saying, oh, well, if you played in the Super Bowl, you should get in the Hall of Fame. Oh, you shouldn't. Oh, you shouldn't. Les Miles, absolutely ridiculous for trying to sue LSU. I could keep going on and on about that, but we're at the end of today's show, so I'm gonna climb down off my soapbox, and thank you for watching, or tuning into, I should say, the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Have a great Tuesday. I will talk to you tomorrow.